KHK.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, Rich?
Just an update. I went down to sound. I went down to sound and other controllers and device manager, and there was a device listed sound, you know, just sound. So it didn't say input or output. So I deleted that and then went to install, reinstall, and this time it came up and it said, update new driver or whatever, and I did it, and I thought that was the answer, but it wasn't. When I go into the system and I look under sound, it says under input, no input devices found. And all it says under that is pair a new input device or add a device. That's just for Bluetooth. I tried that too. Can't do it that way. So I'll go to Lenovo. But I wanted to ask, Chet brought up something that I never knew the answer of. When you have a piece of coax and then it has a braid around it, it also has a like foil part to it that I always, when I'm soldering on PL259s, I always cut that foil part off. What is that foil part in addition to the braid? What is it there for?
It's for further isolation. The cable TV 75 ohm transmission line that's very ubiquitous is has four shields around it. A little bit obsessive, but it helps somewhat with the isolation and the specifications for transmission line at an additional cost, because you know every extra layer they charge you for.
Well, I think Chet hit the nail on the head when he was talking about, you know, there are shields and there are shields. So sometimes when you peel back that foil, you see a shield that is like two strands wrapped around the, you know, the inner conductor. And I thought maybe the foil is making up for the lousy and cheap shield that they have on this coax. Of course, it was cheap coax. Could that be a reason?
Probably not. They're just marketing it as a clone of something else. My LMR 400 is a buck a foot. Last time I bought some, and it also has an inner aluminum foil shield covered by a dense copper braiding.
Yeah, this is a very not dense copper braiding. Not on the antenna I'm talking about, you know, with my problem with Boston ATC, but I have other coax that has a very, very sparse braiding around it. I think to put foil, aluminum foil, around it is a way better, a way cheaper way than to add dense copper braiding to it. So that's probably the reason. Anyway, I'm on to Lenovo. Talk to you later.
Okay, good luck. I mean, the only other problem that wouldn't really be fixable is if the actual hardware component failed on the motherboard. Then it's just not recognizing any of the signals, and it just thinks that it's not there. Other than fixing the motherboard, there's not much I think you could do. Hopefully it's just software related, that something got really terribly corrupted and it's sort of stuck in the middle and not, doesn't know where to go. It can't delete itself. It can't replace itself. It just keeps on being inaccessible. So that's something you could fix with software. The hardware failure Unfortunately, you just have to go with an alternative USB-based solution under those circumstances. The Bluetooth, unfortunately, is sort of designed for a specific use, whereas a microphone pretty much just wants to pick up any noise that it can pick up. It's not as smart as Bluetooth algorithms are.
Try it again.
Say again?
Yeah, this is Chet again, WB2AHK, one more time, sorry.
Sure, Chet.
I think we're getting close to the problem here. I'm not saying that he used that call action for his listening to Boston transmissions of their air band, but when you run into a coax that has the foil on the outermost end, and then you peel it off just to, you can unravel it, right? And then you see, I swear, I've got a couple of tiny little pieces of copper, and next in line, and unless you use it at crimper, you can forget about using that for RF transmissions. I don't care how many feet of coax that you have with a transmission cable like that, that only has the foil that you're pulling off in the first place, the outer conductor, and then you see a couple of strands of copper. That's only maybe 5 or 6 strands of copper. You have to be able to solder to those 5 or 6, 7 strands of copper. Yeah, he already cut off the aluminum outer braid. You can't solder to that. And good luck trying to melt solder to the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 tiny little strands of copper, putting it in the PL-259 and then dripping copper in through the hole. It ain't never going to touch. Well, if it does, it's only going to melt the inner conductor if it's made out of junk. And it's going to, if you're not careful, you're going to melt the insulation between the center conductor and the outer conductor up to 5 or 6 strands. It's a bad, bad deal to use foil like that, but I don't care how many lengths of coax, 5 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, it's absolutely useless for RF transmission, believe me, if you take off the outer foil. In that case, you have to use a crimper. Whenever you see the aluminum foil wrapped around, swirled around a piece of junk coax like that, you cannot solder to it. And you have to use a crimper, and then you have to make sure that you have the right PL-259 that is designed to be crimped in the first place. You can't solder to a RF plug that is not designed to be crimped. And you can't crimp those, the ones that are made for soldering use, you can't crimp them. So, in effect, you're not making any connection over there, an RF connection. And it's a big mess. So I'm just saying that don't use that kind of cable. This is all the guys listening, not the rest. Maybe new guys are listening. Don't ever try to use a cable like that that has an aluminum foil that's wrapped around, and then when you pull that off, thinking that you can't solder to it, you only see a couple of strands. Bad news. Don't use that cable for the fact that you want to talk to the repeater. Maybe Rich is lucky with doing that, and he could talk to the repeater, wherever he is, maybe not too far away, the input. But that's not good stuff to use for longevity or even, at all. Don't even use that when you want to use it for RF. Sorry, but you bought the wrong cable. That's it, Roy.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely, Chet. I wouldn't use a soldering iron on it. I wouldn't use a crimper on it. I would use a garbage can on it. Pound foolish type of nonsense. You shouldn't get crappy transmission line if you discover that you've been lied to and robbed. You just have to deal with it and throw the crap away. You can't make it into anything better than it is. Invest in good quality transmission line. It will hopefully last you many years. buy from reputable organizations. Don't go to eBay and find some guy quoting LMR 400, because, as you said, Chet, that doesn't mean it's times microwave. Make sure that they specifically say times microwave and buy it from a retailer. It'll cost you a little bit more, but you'll have a better time of it. Also, you mentioned batteries. Unfortunately, this is kind of the nature of what China has been doing for years and years. And no doubt you've been hearing in the news that Louis Vuitton and all of these high-end, glamorous pieces of apparel that they charge, you know, $20,000 for, cost them about $500 to be made in China. So most likely China as well. It's a matter of quality assurance. Our iPhones are made in China, but they're made under strict quality assurance so that they're relatively very good quality. But if you don't pay for very good quality, you can get things as cheap as you want. They'll cut as many corners off as possible. And unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that we live with, we have little say in the matter. For the price that you could make a Duracell in China, you know, you could make a dozen Duracells in China for the price of making one in the United States. And Americans are cheap. Hams are cheap. I understand it. You know, we don't want to pay premium prices. And even when we do pay premium prices these days, we're being screwed with cheap China stuff.
Roy, have an observation.
Yes?
I went to the Realtek site. By the way, when you Google Realtek audio drivers, there are like six sites that come up first before the Realtek site. And you know, those six sites are all selling you something. I hate looking for drivers on the internet, you know, because, you know, PCHelp.com and all these other sites are just trying to sell you something. But anyway, this is confounding also. Under high-definition audio codec software on the Realtek site, Windows 7, 8, 8.1, Windows 10 are listed, but not Windows 11. Why is that?
Because they didn't update their websites, most likely. Hopefully that they didn't update their drivers. Again, for you, I would suggest going through Lenovo. It's a secure, legitimate, it's Chinese too, unfortunately. What can you do with this life? But you can just list your model number that you can get off the control panel's information system page, and it'll give you the exact driver that you need. Otherwise, if you just go to Realtek, they'll probably offer you a generic multi-driver that'll kind of best guess what it should install. Whereas theoretically, if you go to Lenovo's site, they have it listed there. So you can do whatever you want to do here. I would sort of go with Lenovo personally. But yeah, I mean, if you just look for drivers, you'll bang into these driver software that promise you that it will scan your system, find the up-to-date drivers, and install them, except that when you run the free program, it says, well, we don't install anything until you pay us to buy the product. And again, it's stuff that you could do by yourself. You don't need them. It's a scam. You there, Rich?
Yeah, I'm just searching for the Lenovo driver site. I know you have to be very, very careful with driver downloads and where you're getting them from. And they list the date, Realtek lists the date of 2024. So I would be, it's confounding why they don't have Windows 11 attached to all the other Windows for the latest driver. But like I said, I will report back. I'll have this solved or not solved by Definitely by before Paul's SpaceNet.
AC2GS. Okay, again, I wish you luck. Yeah, you got to understand, Realtek is not a consumer company. It's you're not going to buy a Realtek chipset for the motherboard that you're building. So they're primarily OEM. They will release their up-to-date drivers to their OEM partners like Lenovo before they get around to handing it to the website designer to post it on their own site. So I wouldn't be at all amazed that they're a good 6 months behind on the website.
6 months? They're like 2 years behind.
I thought you said 2024.
Yeah, a year behind.
Okay, well, I gave him the benefit of the doubt, but okay. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
No. I was just saying, can we go further? Because it's when you call, you've been talking about the driver and the speaker.
Well, it's technology. It's important to some people. I mean, I think we've all kind of had little problems with our computers where drivers just disappear and we have to figure out how to make them reappear. I've had loads and loads and loads of goofy computer problems. So I don't think it's a waste of time. But I think it was well spent. But everyone is free to have their own opinion. Any other comments before we move on?
WB2BS, so I wonder what.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
Sorry. Speaking of audio, I think I lost your audio there. Hopefully I will hear you when I go back. If I remember correctly, and I've occasionally had difficulty on Zoom, and I think Windows 11 is notorious for microphone issues, by the way. I've heard that from some podcasters. In any case, I believe on Zoom you can go to the microphone if the little up arrow to select and select a different microphone input from your audio the microphone input that's different than, say, your camera if you want to. So you can use a Boom headset, and I think I've done that. I usually don't bother because occasionally something acts weird and I find in the middle of a work conversation people can't hear me. But I think you can. I'm pretty sure you can do that on Zoom. Go ahead.
AC2GS, yes, you can. You can set it for any available video stream and any available audio stream, you can set headsets, you can set speakers, you can set microphones. It's all adjustable with the front end of Zoom.
Maybe as simple as simply plugging in a different microphone and telling Zoom to look at that microphone instead of your light cam or whatever camera-microphone combination you have plugged in. It depends on how you're feeding the CW, whether you're feeding the CW tone directly into a line input or into a microphone. Anyway, that might well be the problem. Of course, I'm assuming, since this is a problem that's been going on for a while, that he already tried the simple expedient of rebooting the computer, because that sometimes mysteriously solved a lot of very vexing problems in Windows. And you've seen that too, Roy. Go ahead.
That's the old IT crowd's funniest line. The guy at the IT department picks up the phone and immediately says, "Have you tried turning it off and turning it on again?" I'm sure he's turned it off and on many times between him first noticing that. The problem is that the device are populated by the control panel. So if your control panel doesn't register the device, neither will your operating system and the programs that pull the data from the operating system. So if he were to run Zoom, say, and pull out the sound, the microphone inputs, he would find that the field would be empty because as far as the control panel is concerned, there are no audio input devices. So that's the problem. Either it's a hardware problem where the input device died for some weird reason, or more likely a corrupt driver at the level of the operating system. Windows 11 has all kinds of problems. Windows 11, the 24H2, the 2024 update, destroyed USB microphones. All of my radios that have USB feeds got corrupted, and I had to redo things when I upgraded to 24H2. So, you know, Windows 11 is a problematic thing. I haven't really found any great features. If anything, they've removed features from Windows 10. So that's the big problem with the latest, greatest. They fixed the USB audio driver issue a couple of months ago, and I updated my main machine to the latest Windows 11 just to see how things are going. My Lenovo laptops, I have two of them. I can't do that. They're still, they corrupt my taskbar. So I'm waiting to try it again in another 6 months.
WS2S.
Yes, Paul.
When I got my external mic, I did exactly what Frank just said. You know, you go onto Zoom, you flick the little microphone, you know, the little up arrow, and, before you do anything, it shows that you're really going off the internal microphone, and then there's a choice for, another microphone with a USB connector. You click on that, and that was it, and then the microphone came to life. But yeah, it doesn't sound like that's going to help Rich, though. He's got other issues. Yeah. Okay, anyway, back to you, Roy, and good evening, Frank. WS2S.
Yeah, I don't think it would help, Rich. If you would have gone to control panel sound, you would have found the USB microphone listed there as well. And it the software in the operating system takes that information from the control panel in order to populate your options on things like Zoom. So, if it doesn't show up in the control panel, it's not going to show up on the operating system, and it's not going to show up on any piece of software that hooks into the operating system.
Boy, you're right about this Lenovo site, Roy. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, once you told me that it was Lenovo, I mean, that's the place to go. I mean, Dell's not terrible, but Lenovo is delightful. There's a place that says, what is the model number? And not kind of the generic model number, but each modification has a specific nomenclature. So if you look up the specific model designation on the system window, it'll bring you right to a series of drivers. You can ask it for Windows 11, Windows 10, Windows 9. You could do individual searches and all kinds of fun stuff. It's very well done.
Think in 2025, all support sites would be like this, but they're far from it. It's amazing. You know, the Internet is so mature. But this does stuff with one click. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's a business-oriented brand, so they spend the money necessary. If you go cheap and you don't really care about the end user, then you let stuff look awful and be awful. But these guys kind of live and die on a reputation. It's a reputation I like, despite the fact that IBM sold it to a Chinese manufacturer. They keep a very high quality, and most of my laptops tend to be Lenovo's. And I have an addiction to the little ThinkPad, the little eraser head that you can move around on the keyboard. So I've been using Lenovo's for at least 25 years. And like I said, it's a business-oriented manufacturer, so it tends to, again, be a little bit more expensive than the average no-name. But they have a lot of features that I really, really appreciate.
It identified my serial number and all the drivers and went right to the page that I needed to go to. That's pretty amazing. And they're smart. They save tons and tons. A little box just popped up. We value your opinion after your visit. Would you be willing to provide some quick feedback? This is a pleasure to use, which usually this type of problem is, it's a hellhole to try to solve, even on the manufacturer's website. So hopefully this will do it. I'll report back, like I've said four times already. W2BZ.
Okay, very good, Rich. David, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I want to say that these computers, do they have built-in microphone, sound card, and sound controller inside the computer?
Yes.
Well, it should work okay. I don't know about drivers. I don't use a Windows PC.
Well, I'm sure your Apple has drivers as well. Drivers are a ubiquitous component to operating systems. Drivers are the product-specific interfaces that interface the particular chipset of the hardware products with the operating system. So even though it might be hidden from you, behind the curtain are drivers for all of your hardware devices, especially your graphics card.
QSL. I use an external sound card. It's a DAC. It's made by a company called Apogee. I can plug two microphones in there or two instruments and connect the output into speakers, you know, for like monitoring. The quality of audio is quite good, maybe too good. Go ahead.
Okay, DAC is an abbreviation for a digital analog converter. It converts analog sound amplitudes to digital streams, and it converts digital streams to analog output that feeds headsets or amplifiers or other such things. Most computers have a built-in sound chipsets. In the old days, it used to be a daughter audio card, and some companies were famous for their audio cards that you'd have to insert and run drivers. But the chipset that Rich has, that I have, are ubiquitous. They mount them in most motherboards, and you know, you could buy an extra daughter board, or you can plug in a USB base digital analog converter, but most people tend to use real system chipsets and drivers in their computing.
What's the resolution for that?
I don't know offhand. I think it is capable of as much as 192K.
So that's quite adequate. But you know, how to get a perfect recording and get the resolution that you want, you know, it's a challenge, I think.
Well, you sort of have to know the things you need to know, and you either read about it or by trial and error you discover that as you increase the bit rate, you increase the size of the file, but you increase the tonal resolution. Sometimes that's a little bit above and beyond. Most human beings really can't hear well above, say, 25K, and as we get older, it becomes far worse. I can just make out 10,000 hertz. So to run it at 192K bit rate so that I could listen to it in 40K is the height of optimism.
QSL, I'm wondering, you know, above 10K, you know, would it be harmonics and other sound bits coming through that make it sound more clear compared to less?
I don't know if I quite say clear, because actually you're putting in harmonic noise. But some people who are able to perceive the higher frequencies by detecting the harmonic interactions at the lower frequencies. So they can't hear 40K either, but they can hear a little strangeness going on that they've learned through years of experience that it's an interaction at the higher frequencies feeding together and adding some additional sounds to it. But again, whether the harmonic distortions are clarity is kind of up to the beholder.
I find that CD audio is quite good, and you can upload CD quality audio into your computer. You don't even need a DAC external. And unremastered original recordings, CD audio, and you can put it inside your phone and listen to it while you're walking down the street.
Yeah, CD audio is probably the first popular digital storage, and at the time it was, it's called lossless. It doesn't throw any of the information away. Future sound codecs like MP3 and others have used psychoacoustic tricks to throw out large amounts of data, and most people can't really detect the difference. But CDs were just the bit stream. There was no psychoacoustic trickery and no lossy compression algorithms used for it.
QSL. Yeah, I saved them into a music program for Apple. It used to be called iTunes. And I save it as a 48 kilohertz, 16-bit WAV file.
Okay, that's a decent resolution. Unless you have something weird going on, 192K is just taking up a lot of free space on your hard drive. My Plex radio is capable of outputting audio at 192K, and the reason that it's able to do that is I could run CW Skimmer, and it can detect a number of simultaneous CW signals within that 192K of audio on the band. But otherwise, it tends to be kind of, unnecessarily, wasting memory.
KG2RY. Well, it also depends on the source. You know, the source has to have more resolution than the output, and there are some, but I will say that the CD audio, for even like playing through a normal stereo, stereophonic hi-fi system, And I find that CD audio is quite perfect.
Well, there's a lot of guys out there that wouldn't say anything is perfect. You know, they still, if you give them a choice between the best CD in the world and vinyl, they'll probably choose vinyl. There was some kind of difference in the mix between early digital and early vinyl, so that, you know, people who say that they could hear the difference and the vinyl is better have a point in that the mixing was not the best. Like any technology, the engineers learn from their mistakes and have improved a great deal on digital recording. I think nowadays almost everything music-wise is digitally recorded. There is no analog magnetic tape except in little places that kind of specialize in stuff like that. So, you know, whatever you want. I don't remember vinyl as well as other people. I remember the scratching and the clicking and the scratching and all the other things. So I like digital. You know, and it sounds good to me. But, you know, your mileage might vary. You might love one format. Usually real persnickety guys love the non-lossy type of compression algorithms. But, you know, whatever suits you.
Well, I think about vinyl. Vinyl sounds great, but it also is imperfect. There's always something, you know, that gets in the way. And I see it's better to have a playlist. It's easier to deal with a playlist. And you can put CD audio into a playlist, and it plays really good.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, there are people out there that want their entire 192, bit rate, you know, and if they want to pay extra for it, that's fine with me. I'm not going to pay extra for it, but, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Well, you know, some records sound great, some records sound okay, some records sound terrible. Same with CDs, you know. You get one that sounds really great, you got one that isn't so good, you know? And how do you determine? I guess all a person can do is listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, individual runs have their own quality issues. But, I mean, ultimately, the bit stream from a CD, you can play it for the next 1,000 years. You might have to transfer the bit stream to another medium. You can't do that with vinyl. If you play the vinyl too much, eventually vinyl wears out. And there's no method of kind of renewing it.
Well, you take the vinyl, you gotta clean it. Then you put it on the turntable. You have to play through from beginning to end. You know, maybe there's some cuts that you don't like, you know. And I think the playlist makes it much easier, and you don't get so bored with it. And then there's streaming audio. There's some really great sources for streaming audio, and I really enjoy that. And then, you know, you can listen to all of it on your phone.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, and the quality is really good. Get a nice pair of headphones, put them on, connect to the phone, and then go down the street. Even, you know, older phone like an iPhone 15, you know, has a really amazing quality for audio, more so than the older phones that I had. You know, it makes such a difference. What a joy.
I wouldn't quite call an iPhone 15 an old phone. I mean, I'm walking around with a 13, and I'm fine with it.
QSL, then, you know, you take one of your phones and you set it up for bot detecting. You can detect bots.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just like, how to say, to detect a bot, you have to have somebody call you on this particular type of phone. And if you can talk to them voice, then you know that they're a real person.
Oh, you should really check up Sesame.com. I mean, that's an incredibly not real person who talks and talks and talks. Just type into your browser, sesame.com, and just, you don't even have to ask it a question. You can just stand in front of it, and it'll ramble on endlessly.
Well, you know, people say, well, I want to talk to you on the WhatsApp. You end up talking to them like 24/7, and they're sending you pictures of their lunch, and they're having conversations on the WhatsApp. I just don't have the time and energy for that. I say, no, just call me on my bot-free phone.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a WhatsApp guy either. I like, talking on the telephone. And I don't even really like to talk that much on the telephone, but nevertheless. You got to be very careful with your cell phones and your text messages and other things. There's a trick called pig butchering, which is basically a bunch of Chinese Malaysian gangsters who lock up people and have them contact strangers and eventually try and get them involved in some cryptocurrency scam where they just rob them blind. So you got to be very careful out there. There's a lot of people who've invested a lot of time and trouble in stealing your money.
QSL, and yes, it's very easy to get involved in these scams. You know, they exist, and they're very common, and the best way to deal with it is to avoid it completely. If somebody is sending you a text message and you don't know who they are, be very wary, you know, about that.
Well, it's kind of grown all over the place. A couple of weeks ago, I actually got a Nigerian email scam over the U.S. mail system. I got an envelope. I opened the envelope. I pulled it out. It had a fake lawyer's letterhead and said that a patient of mine passed away recently and really appreciated all that I did for them and would like to give me $1 million. So if you just give us your bank account number and your social security number and a bunch of other things, we'll start the process of giving you this person's millions of dollars.
So there's a lot of that going on now. I'm wondering if there's a way to detect it and then stop it from happening. You know, I don't think that there's so much action against these kinds of things. And I'm not sure, you know, what it's about. Maybe, very, very well-off people taking advantage of people with a smaller bank account.
In this case, I don't think so. They call it the Nigerian scam because a lot of the people working it are kind of poor guys in Nigeria. They have a cell phone and they have a piece of paper with instructions that they pass around and copy to each other, apparently. And, you know, there are a lot of small-time thieves and scoundrels in Nigeria that are siphoning off millions of dollars from Americans and Europeans. Indians and Pakistanis tend to do more of the phone scams than the email scams, but they do a bit of email scamming. You know, most of these people I don't think are filthy rich. The guys that run the scams eventually get filthy rich over time. Most of them are just kind of scrape out a decent living in a poor area where there's very few well-paying jobs available.
You know, I have one right now where they're saying that I owe money to the New York Toll Commission and just go to this site and pay what I owe. You know, you think one old lady someplace is going to pay her tolls.
Yeah,
Wesley recognized. The one underlying feature is how inexpensive it is to kind of throw this out. You get mailing lists for a penny a name, and it costs nothing to pump out a mail server. And you, as you said, you could send a million of these. If you only get a 0.1% response, you're going to be filthy rich. So it pays to do this stuff. If it didn't pay, it would have stopped about a week or two after it started. But it's been going strong for 20 years. Wesley, I assume you want us to bounce to you.
It's up to you.
No, it's legitimate. David, any other closing comments? Because Wesley would like to kind of do his thing.
QSO, beware. There's lots of scams everywhere. And I guess the idea is, you know, you have to know where it's coming from and what it's about so you can avoid it completely. KG2R1.
Yeah, and it's always good to have a well-calibrated Bravo Sierra meter on you, because, you know, some of these things, after I read about the first three words in the email, I know what's going on there. It's a lot of times also they will misspell things and be ungrammatical. And at first, way back in the early days, I thought that they were just illiterate. But apparently, there's a reason for them doing that. They do that to kind of get rid of the people who aren't completely senile, who probably would burn out rather quickly in the scam and just waste their time. So they're looking for people who are totally unaware of anything. You know, if a lawyer sends them a letter and misspells 18 different words and puts commas where periods are supposed to be, and it doesn't light something up in you, you are a prime candidate for being robbed blind. So, unfortunately, there will always be those people among us. There are predators and there are prey. And then there's the rest of us kind of going, could we throw the predators off the cliff? Anyway, enough of this bit. On to you, Wesley.
Thank you very much. And to AGN. First, May 25, 2025, the ESFTX-1 series transceivers is expected to be available in mid-late of May 2025. So we have two transceivers. One of them is FTX1F, which is all bands, but it's QRP. So it goes up to 70 centimeters, all bands. And the other one is exactly the same. The only thing is that it looks like it has a bigger screen, just a little bigger screen, and it has 100 watts. Now, from the video that I saw, it looks like the body is contained in the display. I mean, in the front panel that is detachable, and then the radio by itself is changeable. So you have the radio by itself, which is the body of the radio that is 100 watts, and you have FTX1 Optima. If you do not have it, the body is QRP, and it is FTX1F. Now, the price for it is still in European Euro, which is 2,069 Euro, but this is with VAT, and if you exclude the VAT, it's 1,724 Euro, so you got to prepare about $1,800, $1,900 plus tax, New York tax for it. So, but I'm not sure if the tax should be charged on the important items, then I'm not sure, because right now we have a crazy situation. So that would be all about that. The next one is, let me drop. Okay. LAP 599, TX1000, HF, VHF, UHF radio. It has so many things you could imagine. It looks beautiful, but there is a but. Okay. LAP 599 just announced the TX1000, advertised as whatever I said. No word about the price, but TX1000 shares a striking resemblance to other Russian radio Volv, because it is Russian, made in Russia. Actually, they tried to sell it by Dubai, but anyhow, all bands, and my understanding is that it was designed by UA3REO, and you can find more about it on the net. La 599 is a Russian product made by Russian, who are originally from Russia. No address, no information about the manufacturer, no indication that it is a Russian product provided. If you wish buy one, the web is redirecting you into the web name Desert Wireless. Sounds almost like a dessert, but anyhow, that is asking you for name and address and email address, but the reseller may not, is not giving you any information about itself. For me, it looks like the best practice of Soviet KGB, now called FSB. When you add your credit card, they will grab you by your private parts. I escaped from the terror that I was at, and I do not wish anyone to experience that. There are a number of resellers, eBay, Amazon, and China, where you can buy it, and of course, legal note that I have to say, the opinion expressed is my own. The transceiver that is advertised is said to be experimental, and is not in a mass production yet, but everything that you could think of is there. Let me drop. Okay, the next one. SDR receiver, surprising improvement, preventing local interference on shortwave. I sent the email to Dr. Roy. If he wants to put your words on it, I would appreciate that. Dr. Roy, did you have a chance to view?
Yeah, I saw it. By the way, the positive aspect of the previous radio is since it's Russian, there's no tariff. Make of that as you will. Anyway, I don't really see the point of the exercise. I mean, he was going into this tangent about how to properly use ferrites, I guess, to limit the amount of interference in line. I don't know. I guess if you need a nap, it's a good video to fall asleep on.
Okay. So, in this improvement to the SDR, it is just that if you use it as a receiver or additional receiver, or some SDRs, they have a separate input for the receiver, and you just connect a piece of wire into it. It will pick up all of the noises that you have in your house and all around, but the guy who made that video had that title, SDR Receiver Surprising Improvement Preventing Local Interference on Shortwave. He showed the spectrum on when he had just piece of wire connected into the input of the receiver, and then when he just grounded the other part of the DNC or SMA. Most of those interference disappeared, so that's interesting and important. Let me drop. Okay. Another subject, why all over the light? That's the title of the video. So if you want to go to YouTube and put on it, why all the light? I'm not going to go deep into it. So the text below will be read on the technique without mentioning any additional information, because I don't want to do it. This is a technical net. But the message says, I'm not, so as I said, I'm not going deep into this video, but the video was made by Canadian Ham Radio Amateur, and it is worth watching. You will be able to read real opinions expressed by 2,443 comments in just a few days. Video has quickly got over 80,000 views of hams and ham-oriented individuals. It is what they think about lying to Americans and lying to the world. Again, the title is Why All the Lying? Let me drop. Okay, this one is not in the list, but it was prepared for, by me and sent earlier. And this is Nuclear Power in Space, the Rise of Fusion Drive. If Paul had a chance and you had a chance to view it, it is about, so again, the title of the video is Nuclear Power in Space, the Rise of Fusion Drive. I said that in the email the transcript was modified, all of the transcript due to its BS was removed. The video creator has no knowledge about particle physics processes employed in the concept. I wasted 1 hour of my time just because the subject was interesting. But we have the, and I sent you also the picture of it. Pulsar Fusion is proposing 2 megawatt nuclear fusion orbital component. That would be delivered 2027. The company is working on direct fusion drive, DFD, a compact nuclear fusion engine that could provide both thrust and electrical power for the spaceship. So, till now we were using electrical power supply, whether it was nuclear or any other means, solar panels, just to power the electronics. Now we're trying to do it trying to move the spaceship with that power. There is another one, which is Sunbird Migratory Transfer Vehicles, and is also giving you quite interesting features. And the drive fusion, the drive DFD is using nuclear fusion rocket engine. Well, we know that Russians were experimenting with it. They were not successful with it. We know that Americans in 50s, 60s were trying to do the same, but in the air, they didn't send it to the space. But PFRC-2 is supported by Department of Energy, ARPAE, and NASA, Innovative Advanced Concept, and so on. So, and they trying to use it in Pluto. Oh, that was even used in Pluto orbiter and lander. So, in just 4 years, and they. I'm interested if Paul has any comment on it and to explain.
Hi, Wes. No, I looked through it, and it's a big website. It looks like a
bunch of different things to click on. I saw the word fusion power all over the place, and when I see fusion, I kind of ignore it. And I saw they were going to use it for space travel, and they were probably developing a, a couple of megawatt unit. I don't know how they could be developing it when they haven't even, gotten fusion to work on Earth yet. So I kind of like skipping.